Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 358, our last of 2025, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is Jason Heaton, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, James Stacey. One more time for 2025, how are you doing?
One more time, man. Yeah, everything's great. Happy that it's we're close to the end of the season, or close to the end of the year, start of the holiday season. I'm looking forward to that kind of break and the wind down. Obviously, the adore making TGN, so the break there is mostly because it gets difficult to schedule things and people and time when everyone's moving around. Less so needing a break, but yeah, it's been a big year. Certainly a big year for TGN. It's something we can probably get into next year when we start to, you know, approach the idea of what we'll want to accomplish with our 10th year as a functioning podcast. Everything's great. We just recorded a QA, which is the October one. By the time this comes out, that should be live. The final Q&A for the year, which is November, should go out just before the end of the year, probably just after Christmas. But we'll see. I might get it out earlier than that. All depends. And then the show will be back as normal on January 7th, which should be pretty good. Jason, what have you been up to with your the last kind of week and the, you know, with the holiday sort of looming on the horizon?
Yeah, it's kind of, as you said, it's this time of kind of a break. It does feel welcome. And I don't consider myself nearly as busy as you, with especially with your work at Hodinkee. And I just think it all comes down to this sort of sense of building towards, people want to get stuff done before the end of the year. We have a few episodes we got to get through. Yeah. And then it's just stuff like, oh, I forgot I need to buy a gift for so-and-so, or, you know, I promised to make cookies for this party, or, you know, there's any number of gatherings that people want to do, and it's all fun stuff, but it does kind of add to this, especially for a person of kind of my demeanor. I don't want to say I get easily overwhelmed, but I think, you know, when the schedule starts to stack up and I see a lot of things on the horizon, on the calendar, I get a little bit stressed, I guess, in a very low level way. So it'll be nice kind of when all's said and done, you know, next week, to just sort of chill out a bit. It's been all fun stuff. I've got, been doing some fun kind of holiday shopping, for various people. And then tonight, we're recording this on a Tuesday, there's a kind of a local, not local, but the kind of Minnesota, unofficial Minnesota chapter of the Explorers Club. We're having a little holiday gathering this evening. With a bunch of us are getting together for a potluck at the home of a guy who is a fairly well-known Arctic explorer who's got a bit of a museum at his house not too far from here. So I'm looking forward to that. And then Christy and I are hosting a winter solstice party on Saturday. It's the night before the shortest day of the year. And the weather's looking reasonable. So we're going to have a couple of small fires going outside on the patio and, make a big thing of chili and have some drinks and kind of make the most of the shortest day of the year in this very cold part of the world. So yeah, that's all this week. And then next week is Christmas and some family visiting and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's just all getting ready for that. So this afternoon, right after we're done here, I've got to go pick up some food and some provisions for both events this week. And
any highlights on the menu for the solstice party?
Well, we're going to do like a big thing of kind of vegetarian chili. And the one thing I'm picking up this week is there's a really good Indian restaurant that does samosas, you know. That's
I love samosas.
I had some. I went to kind of a art opening / sale last weekend, and it was run by this Indian couple that was selling these beautiful textiles, and as kind of a little party favor or refreshments, they had wine, and then they had this tray of fresh samosas from a local restaurant. And I hadn't had samosas in a long time, and I was like, these make great kind of finger party food. I always forget about that. I'm going to go pick up like 50 samosas this afternoon. So
I love some, I mean, look, my love of hand-sized food, pierogies, mm-hmm. chicken wings, oysters, strong play in my life. But there's a spot in the town where I grew up, Caledonia, that does a really solid vegetarian samosa full of potatoes and peas. And then there's this like brown mm-hmm. sauce you put on it. That's awesome. And the same place does a pretty mean paneer pakora, which is like the fried cottage cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Incredible. Just incredible. So yeah. Good. Man, where I used to live in Toronto in the West End, there was a really good Indian restaurant we liked. We haven't found one that we quite like as much yet here. So we're kind of on the hunt. Maybe I'll have to try again. It's a good curry season.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you and I went to a place in Vancouver. I think we got Indian takeout. Oh, dude. Yeah.
Gate of India. I miss that because Gate of India has my favorite dish, which is chicken Jalfrezi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's just nuts. I miss Gate of India all the time. Shout out to those guys for sure. Man. The Jalfrezi ripped. It was so good. Man, I'm just realizing I'm hungry.
Yeah, I know.
A big spread from Gate of India would really hit the spot right about now. That sounds great. Well, yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with a samosa. Works for everybody.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
For sure. Fantastic.
And you were in New York briefly last week. How did that go?
Yeah, I was in New York for a couple days of meetings, you know, a lot of talking, you know, that sort of thing. But it's good. We've got some big plans for some changes and some tweaks to the kind of ideas at Hodinkee, and then the return of some stuff that people have been asking for. It's going to be a big year, I think. You know, we've got the right players and the right sort of set up to do some exciting things and more of what's working and less of the stuff we find boring and all that kind of stuff. So it was a good couple of days. You know, had a chance to connect with the team and do a little bit of a holiday party. All that kind of stuff's great. But man, getting on the plane for the last flight home of the year.
Oh yeah.
Is a real good feeling. Cause I'm traveling pretty early next year, second week of January. I'm back on the road and zero complaints about that. It's super, I am super privileged to be able to do that, but there is something about being like, hey, that's my last one. I made status for next year. I've got 50K. I got Star Alliance gold. I'll be all right. And, and you know, I was a good boy. I didn't have I didn't have any burgers from Shake Shack, which is a rare move for me when I'm at LaGuardia. Yeah. But yeah, it was a good year. That should be good. But yeah, like I said, there's something about the, you know, I think I would think I was literally boarding my last flight when I got a notification from Flighty and it's like, here's your year's passport, which is where they do like your, it's the Spotify review or whatever it's called, but for your flights and, you know, how many hours you lost to delays and all that kind of stuff. And and I was like, yeah, you know, it's December, man. I like a month that has its own speed.
Yeah, right.
It's December.
Yeah.
That's a January problem. I like a month that delays its problems a little bit. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. And then, speaking of food, my mouth is watering. speaking of food, I got influenced by Instagram to try Costco sashimi.
Mm.
So you go to Costco, you buy yourself it's just a massive piece of salmon.
Mm.
It's got to be a whole side of a fish.
Yeah. Right?
And you get farm raised because the chance of parasites is almost zero. So Sarah grabbed me a giant piece of farm raised Norwegian salmon. I'd seen all these things online that are like, hey, if you like sashimi, stop paying, you know, whatever number to order in on Uber Eats occasionally and just make it yourself at home. And I was like, well, it can't be that easy. It just can't. And so you know, cover the thing in salt, let it sit in the fridge for 45 minutes, rinse it off, and then section it up. And if you want, assuming it's the right temperature, just go ahead and eat it.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, man, maybe my expectations were like a 6 out of 10, mm-hmm. and it delivered like an 8 or a 9.
Wow.
Like among the best slice of salmon I've eaten in a while. And now I kind of sectioned it out into meal sized portions and then prepped it for the freezer. And I'll just pull one out the night before, like right when we're done recording this, I'm going to go eat some sashimi, which is just like one of my favorite foods. I would prefer tuna, but I'll take salmon all day long. It's actually the only way that I like salmon in any specific way is raw.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, we got to stop talking about food. This is torture.
But yeah, if that's something that you like and I'm a big Costco guy,
mm-hmm.
Especially after listening to the Acquired episode that covers Costco, it made me like it even more.
Mm.
It seems like a great employer and really kind of running by their own playbook, which I like for these companies, but the salmon was nuts. So this will be a move for sure moving forward.
Oh, man. Yeah. Indian food and Japanese food, man, just, yeah.
Nuts. So good.
Okay.
Especially when you come from Canada where, like, we have poutine.
Yeah.
We have lots of great food. It just came from somewhere
else. Yeah, right, right, yeah.
But I think that's probably enough chit-chat. We got to keep on a schedule here as I have a meeting today. Meetings, goodness sakes, in December.
Right, come on.
This meeting could have been a January meeting.
Yeah.
but, yeah, I have a meeting in just a little while. So why don't we get into a little bit of wrist check?
Sure, yeah. Well, no big surprise. I'm kind of ending the year where I started with my Pelagos FXD. I initially had thought about pulling out the Navitimer today and wearing it. It's kind of my holiday kind of winter watch on a Bund strap, but I've been wearing the FXD for a couple of weeks and it just hasn't come off. I've got it back on the original really excellent hook and loop strap that it came with, which is getting rather kind of ratty. I've had to hold a lighter to it every now and then to kind of burn, you know, close off those fuzzy edges that keep getting stuck on my sleeves of my sweater. But yeah, it's going strong. It's my pick. I mean, I could kind of just wear it all of 2026, to be honest, but of course I won't, but that's what I've got on today.
That's a good one for sure. Hard to beat it. And then, yeah, I've been wearing a ton of the Vertex that you gave me, the Aqualion M100. I put it on the Marathon rubber and it's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then for whatever reason, I was sitting in my office today and it happens every now and then, just the magnetic draw to the Explorer 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it on and I was like, nope, that didn't do it. So I popped it off the bracelet, threw it on a gray NATO, and it's like coming home.
Oh, yeah.
And now I've got it on and man, I keep looking at it and kind of smiling. It like fits perfectly.
Yeah.
I found my oldest, what I think is my first TGN gray NATO, which is like, it's a lighter color.
Yeah. Yeah.
After several years and the holes are all chewed up and it's all, the end is all bubbled from like multiple rounds of of lighter, you know, surgery.
Yeah.
But it's just, I love this watch so much and it's great on the bracelet. I mean, it's a 5-digit Rolex. It's perfect on the bracelet, but
yeah,
there's something about, I mean, the reason I got this deep into watches, one of the reasons that we made the show, one of the reasons we came up with the name for the podcast, was this video that I've never been able to find of somebody, we think, driving a red E46 M3 around the Alps, perhaps. I always thought it was a Steve Sutcliffe, and then I could never find it, and I don't know that he has an Explorer 2.
Yeah.
But the guy was wearing a Polar Explorer 2 on a gray NATO, and I was just enthralled, and then it's become, you know, I got it for my 30th, so I've had it for almost a decade.
That's kind of perfect. I mean, it's I kind of like that you don't know where you originally saw that video. I think it almost kind of ruins
lore.
It. It's lore.
It's lore at this point.
Right.
You put it in the scrolls and see you know, someday. I don't want anyone. And if you find the video, maybe consider not sending it to me. Because maybe I made it up. Maybe he's wearing like a Casio.
Right.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, one of those cool white dial Timex expeditions from back in the day. But yeah, so that's what I've got on, and it's a treat. I think I'm going to be wearing it for the next little while. It's just so comfortable, and it makes me smile when I look down at it.
All right, well, let's dive into it.
Yeah, this is a fun episode, one that we started doing, I think, just last year. I didn't go back and check. Now that we're in our almost 10th year, I'm going to pretend that I don't remember most of the show.
Yeah.
It removes a burden, you know what I mean? And so last year we started doing, or possibly the year before, don't really remember, but we started doing kind of like a greatest hits of our final notes. And I use the filter of like, is this a final that I've gone back to since getting it off my plate by putting it into a show? And some of these, like there's a handful of ones that ended up on both of our lists. I had to tweak some of mine because it was still on, because you had them on yours as well. And yeah, just it's a solid list of stuff, but I don't think there's any order. Why don't we just go back and forth, each picking one from our list, and we'll see when we run out.
Sure, yeah.
You want to go first?
Sure, yeah. I'll start with kind of a light one, a fun one. You know, you talked about kind of the background of your allure for the gray NATO on an Explorer 2 and a driving video. And this is a driving video that that I shared that, you know, I came across, I believe, on Instagram, as many things do, or a piece of it. And it is... it is the race driver Jacques Lafitte driving a Ferrari F40 in boat shoes, which it's just such a fun. There's just something gleeful that I just chuckle and smile when I watch this video. It's a short piece, but you know, he gets into this F40,
yeah.
He has trouble jamming it into gear, and then it's the kind of this, you know, multiple camera angle thing of him expertly, you know, rowing through the gated shifter in this. Amazing Ferrari, you know, just wearing street clothes. I mean, and you know, not that you can't drive that car in street clothes, but there's just something about the aggressive way he drives it. Kind of his,
for sure,
his very specific of the era hairstyle and clothing choices. Just kind of add to the whole thing. it's just got such a kick out of this.
Yeah, and I mean the whole presentation, the clearly like, you know, pulled from a cable broadcast.
Yeah,
scenario at some point. There's scan lines in the recording. It's a little dirty. And then you get into it, and this, you know, kind of very masculine guy, Jacques, it gets into the car. He kind of has like a Fritz Stamberger vibe to him. And just kind of just absolutely grabs this car by the, you know, the scruff of its neck and has a good time. It's a great video for sure. Well, definitely one that I'll go back to occasionally, or I find myself like recommending to people, you know, in real life. Oh, you got to check this out. Yeah. You know, Jacques Lafitte. Yeah. It's and, you know, I also think for me, this is the, because everybody likes the Ayrton Senna driving video of him in the early NSX, and he's in leather loafers and they've got the foot cam so you can see all the footwork. I think this is like the more brutal version of, there's no talking, you know, he's just kind of, it's, there's something, there are two very different takes on a very similar idea.
Yeah. Right.
Yin and
right.
yang maybe. Yeah. But yeah, very, very fun for sure. Let's see if I've got anything that would line up with that. I must have something on here. Hmm. Well, it's a YouTube video and it's just a lot of fun. I'm going to go with Big Jim's Big Boozy Bike Trip to Braemar.
Very alliterative as well. Yeah,
which was your recommendation. Oh, it's fantastic. It's yeah, maybe I pick it just for the title. But this was your decision, or this was one of your final notes. I didn't keep record of what episode these were from. But this was one from you about a guy in Britain who liked to do this giant bike ride, but he had kind of hidden whiskey along the route, so he could just kind of maintain a comfortable buzz as he went through the British countryside. I highly recommend it. It's from the BBC Archive, 1976. Several people have recommended it to me, like in the months after, and I go, oh yeah, no, Jason was on this vibe a while ago. Great sweater too. There's some sartorial fun in this.
Not much needs to be said about this, and I just got to give a shout out to my buddy Brad Wakefield over in the UK who had originally sent this to me. And
shout out, Brad.
I love the idea of, you know, caching bottles of whiskey in like the stream bed or something where he knows he's going to pass through. But that's a good one.
Yeah, you never know. You might need it.
All right. Well, let's see here. Okay, I'm gonna pick a bit more of a, I guess we can call it a serious one. And this was the documentary film called The Finisher, about Jasmine Paris, who is the first woman to complete the Barclay Marathons. It's a great film, really inspirational story, just grueling. I mean, we've talked a couple of times about the Barclay Marathons. I believe we even had another, you know, pick as a movie about the Barclay Marathons themselves, but this is a more recent piece about Jasmine Paris's accomplishment. It's painful, you know, just to kind of vicariously watch her suffering through this incredible event. Coincidentally, I noticed I missed out last week, but they're running some of the short films for the Banff Mountain Film Festival again. And this is one of the choices for that. I think it's about 45 minutes long. So it's a bit on the long side for those films, but really a great watch, and it's available on YouTube. So yeah, good one.
Yeah, I love a documentary and I love it when they're on YouTube. That's great. Real good stuff. Definitely a must watch for sure. I have another one that we talked about a ton. It probably could have been a final note that we kept going for, you know, while the season was running. But that's probably my favorite TV show of the year, which is The Agency. Showtime and Paramount Plus. It's a TV show. We'll link to the YouTube trailer if that helps. But this is a kind of moody, Le Carré-esque sort of spy thriller, largely hinged on the performance of Michael Fassbender, you know, a perennial favorite of Jason and my own. And, you know, this show made me go back and consider other Fassbender performances.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is an excellent one. I would say that if you get into it and you're not sure that you're loving it, stick it out to like the episode that references The Wooden Duck. I highly recommend it. I think that's where the show really started to find its own pace. And it's just excellent. And it really starts to mesh in with some of the other characters, with Richard Gere and Jeffrey Wright, like guys that we just love. Great show, especially if you're like a bit of a spy nerd. It's a lot of fun.
And I'll follow that one up with another Fassbender piece. It was a good year for him, TGN wise at least. The film Black Bag, which is a very concise, short, I wouldn't say it's fast paced. It's just a kind of a slice in time, almost like a stage play, that's on Amazon Prime with Michael Fassbender and Cate Blanchett. And they play a couple that are both agents, you know, Secret Intelligence Service folks in the UK, and there's some intrigue and suspicion between them and their friends and coworkers about who might be a traitor and how they kind of root that stuff out. It's just some great performances, some great dialogue in this. Very moody again, very stylish. Maybe not the best kind of movie in every respect, but it, you know, some movies you kind of look at and you just watch them almost you look at a painting or something, and it just has this vibe to it. I believe this was a Soderbergh film, which definitely worth viewing.
Yeah, it's a good one for sure. I really enjoyed it. It would be on the list of things to rewatch in the coming months as well. So a good pick for sure. Next on my list, let's bounce to a sort of different vibe. You know, it's the end of the year, so I think this is sometimes you get the chance to start thinking about resolutions and that sort of thing. And we'll recall to a video that launched very early last year from one of my favorite YouTube channels, which I've talked a ton about since it launched, Speed with 3 E's, and it's 10 Habits I Wish I Started 10 Years Ago. I'm not saying, goodness, I hope nobody listening needs to learn all 10 of these habits, but everybody might have one or two that they could sharpen or pick up. I think it's a good video. It's arguably, it's also probably not the only Speed video on my list. If we're doing a refresher, that's been a really important channel for me this year. I think they're the Speed podcast that they do for paid members is excellent, and one I look forward to every week, especially with my beloved JRVP ending. Not too long ago, and you know, missing it throughout this year. I think that's a one that I would recommend. It's nice little refresher. 10 Habits I Wish I Had Started Earlier, and that's from the Speed channel with James Pumphrey.
Nice one. All right, I'm going to keep on this theme. Let's see how long we can kind of keep these threads moving. with another kind of advice oriented bit of content to consume, and it is the podcast that I recently finished the season of, which is Ill Advised with Bill Nye, and that's N-I-G-H-Y, not N-Y-E, the science guy that somebody on Slack said. I was trying to picture Bill Nye, the science guy, doing a podcast about advice.
Yeah, I think people also commonly call him Bill Nye.
Nye, yeah, right.
Which I don't know if that's accurate or not. I don't think I've ever heard him say his name that way. So
yeah, exactly right. And it's funny because there's this. It's a very tongue-in-cheek podcast.
Yeah, it's great.
28 minutes long each episode, where he just kind of goes off on tangents based on questions that people send in about everything from their horses, their Land Rovers, style advice, travel advice, social advice, you know, all this kind of thing. And he does not claim to be an expert, and he says that right up front, but it's really delightful. And then speaking of the pronunciation of his name, at the end, very end, when they're doing the credits, one of his producers comes on and says, executive producer of this is Bill Nye, and that's how it's correctly pronounced, Bill Nye. And of course it's not, but it's just funny. So anyway, I recommend it. I just finished, I think there were about 8 episodes in the first season, so I'm already looking forward to next seasons, but definitely worth a listen.
Yeah, good stuff. I didn't listen to 8 of them. I probably listened to 2 or 3.
Yeah.
But man, if you're like cooking in the kitchen or even just doing the dishes, that sort of thing, it's a good one because it's the right length.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah. Good work there. He'd be a dream TGN guest.
Man.
Wouldn't he?
He'd be great.
I bet you we're not more than 1 or 2 away from him. We'll see if we can develop that asset.
Yeah. Yes, Martian.
All right. Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's dive into another one that I've used all year long. I've recommended. I have learned that it's not always available in every version of the App Store, but the Adobe Project Indigo app has become a weirdly freeing thing for me, because I can now, with my older, I have an iPhone 15, with an older iPhone, I can take a photo that I'm happy enough with it to put it on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So I'm out, I want to take a wrist shot, or I see a watch, or that sort of thing. I'm blown away by, it's super computational. So some of the reports, even some, maybe the way I first introduced the app, is not that it's doing less computation than Apple. It's just designing a photo that looks more like something that came out of an SLR.
Mm.
And it does a better job at smoothing text and things like that, which the Apple one can have. It gets pretty jello-y depending on, again, I think it gets better if you get into a more modern phone than what I have. But for me, the Project Indigo has been like a big change in the way that I approach social media, and not having to feel like, all right, I'll go downstairs and put a memory card in the SL2 and switch to the lens I need and get the photo I need upstairs and then take the memory card and put it into something so I can take, you know, and bounce around, that sort of thing. But this is just, it's more like one or two steps, and especially like just wanting to get the photo to be good enough to put it on the Slack for a wrist check. It does a nice job for that. So I highly recommend it if it's available in your area, supports your phone, all that kind of thing. I hope it's something that they bring to a broader platform and ideally one that remains free. We'll see.
All right. I'm moving into, I guess we started with some car stuff. I'm going to move back into that with one that I believe, I don't know if it was a primary final note or if it was one that you kind of tagged on to a different one, because we were talking about the Bugatti Veyron, and you cited this Top Gear episode, Series 7,
oh, yeah.
5, from 2005, where the three guys, you know, Clarkson, Hammond, and May, are racing from Italy to London to deliver truffles to a restaurant, you know, posh place, Tower 42, apparently. Hammond and May are in a Cessna airplane, and Clarkson's driving the Veyron. And look, I will never claim to be the biggest Top Gear fan, but every time I watch a clip or anything that somebody recommends, especially you, I do enjoy it. And the Veyron is just endlessly fascinating to me as a vehicle, as a just a design object. And to kind of frame it in this kind of, I don't want to say tongue in cheek, but just a less serious manner than just like 0 to 60 times and, you know, top speed kind of stuff. This is just, it's just, mm-hmm. it's so fascinating to see it being used as this mode of transport in kind of this quirky kind of way. So it's a good video. Holds up well.
I think that one, most of the YouTube that exists now around cars is because of seasons of Top Gear from this era.
Mm-hmm.
Not just with those three guys, but from the first 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
It was just magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, they took the show so seriously, but they did not take themselves seriously at all. But then these kind of bits that they would do, whether it was like, oh, we're going to deliver truffles, right? Like, that feels so standard now, 20 years later, after this episode aired. But you got to go back. And the first several years of the show, I mean, the show was great for a long, long, long time. Really entertaining. But, it, you know, at times it felt more edited, more scripted, mm-hmm. more car related, not car related at all. It kind of vacillated. But that core of that era. And then, yeah, for the Veyron, man, you know, Veyron's 20 years old. This year, and I think it, you know, it's an SR71 moment for a combustion automobile, and I think it's a fascinating thing. I look back with great pride and appreciation that I got to drive one, and then also drive the Chiron. I was watching the Throttle House video for the cars they're looking forward to in 2026, and Thomas and James highlighted the Tourbillon, which is the kind of forthcoming naturally aspirated V16 Bugatti, which is just wild, like just crazy. And I go, well, I'm no longer in a world where I'm ever going to get to drive that. And I felt, you know, forlorn. But yeah, you know, you realize you talk about not counting your blessings, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just a marvelous thing. And I think something, an idea that has aged really well in a world where like a lot of cars are more than $1 million now. And just as an object of interest, such a thing.
Yeah.
Just a thing, not even just a car, just a great thing that someone made. And it's a great one. So yeah, thanks. A good pick and one that I was happy to highlight when I had the opportunity back whenever that show was. All right, let's see what I've got here for the next one. Oh, a fantastic story. One of my kind of highlight stories, a story I've gone back and looked over a couple times since. Watches of Espionage and Ben Lowry put out the Citizen Aqualand, an underrated legend in military service. Obviously a big year for the Aqualand, the 40th anniversary. You know, I think if we did the word cloud for this past year, maybe only a couple brand and terms would be bigger, Pelagos perhaps, but Aqualand I think would definitely be up there. It's a watch we talk a ton about, one of my favorite watches of this year. And I just thought this was a great story to kind of add to the appreciation of these weird sort of oddball watches, is kind of digging into the connection to various military outfits around the world, where, man, does the watch ever just look the part? Too. It's cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Big shout out to a great year for Watch of Espionage, and certainly to Ben's stories on the site as well.
All right. Let's see. Where do I want to go now? All right. I've got another YouTube video that actually came as a final note via our friend and erstwhile moderator on Slack, longtime buddy Chris Soule, who you know we had on a couple of episodes, and you know, Chris being the avid diver and student of diving history, pulled up this great old National Geographic Explorer episode from 1986 called "The Atocha Quest for Treasure," and you know, if you're someone who kind of dreams about or thinks about, you know, treasure hunting and finding gold bars at the bottom of a tropical sea, like the Atocha is like the name that pops up first. It's, everybody's kind of familiar with it, you know, in some respects, based largely on the larger than life person that was the treasure hunter who found it, Mel Fisher, who had a shop in the Florida Keys. I mean, this was, you couldn't almost ask for a better location to find a shipwreck full of treasure than the Florida Keys, for various reasons. But National Geographic did this episode kind of highlighting the search for the Nuestra Señora de Atocha, or Our Lady of Atocha, that has now just become kind of a symbolic kind of watchword for any sort of treasure hunting. And it's just great. It's such a slice of time, kind of mid-80s. You know, diving and treasure hunting. So it's a good one.
Very good. Yeah, a great pull for sure. And I actually have one that I think matches up kind of nicely. It's from 1988. And it is a documentary about the legacy of a guy named Stan Rogers. We talked about him recently. And yeah, this is just an excellent, simple, straightforward sort of, you know, public radio, public access TV sort of documentary about this guy, Stan Rogers, who is a musician that was born and raised largely similar to where I was in Ontario. And then moved out east where his family was from and kind of took up a very specific type of like a sea shanty sort of folk music background and had a massive impact on Canada and on the east coast of Canada's sort of cultural relevancy throughout the world. And it's a great documentary about one of my favorite Canadians. And I've watched it several times this year. I listen to the music constantly. My son loves Barrett's Privateers. I'm typically blessed with a pretty strong memory and I can't get down all the lyrics. You know, it's a lot going on there. But yeah, I highly recommend One Warm Line, The Legacy of Stan Rogers. So the whole documentary is on Kensington TV's YouTube. It's about 45 minutes long and it's a great one.
Yeah. Good stuff. I mean, I don't know why, but it's kind of a warming type of thing to listen to or to watch this time of year. And I was not familiar with Stan Rogers before you introduced this, couple of months ago. So yeah, good one. I have two more. I have another YouTube video. I'll save that for last, but kind of a practical one that you just brought up, I believe an episode or two ago that you'd clued me on. And it's the Vgate iCar Pro OBD2 Bluetooth device, plus the car scanner app. Mm-hmm. And again, this was a very recent final note, but it's something that you had turned me on to a couple of months ago. I was working on Christy's Prius and it was getting a check engine light and wanted to kind of diagnose that. And you've been using this Bluetooth device that you plug into the diagnostic port on most modern cars have this now, if not all, that allows you to sync it up with an app on the phone. And it's just, it's so empowering to be able to kind of read these codes and figure out what's going on with a car when you get an error message or something weird. And it works a charm. It's great. It's helped me diagnose problems and look into things and troubleshoot and then just clear, you know, annoying dashboard warning lights. So it's been great. And it was like $35 on Amazon and then the scanner app is free. So yeah, I've appreciated that. And look, can't recommend it enough to anybody with a modern vehicle.
Yeah. I would say anyone who's running a car out of warranty,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
where you might want to have a little bit of idea of like, oh, did I just leave the gas cap loose?
Yeah.
Something like that before you take it to a shop or that sort of thing. And yeah, the other thing that I realize is I can also fill in a blank here. When I brought this up, you know, we were pushing a little longer into the show and our timeline, so I didn't get into it. But I mentioned that I'd got a new car for the family. And then on the Slack, people were like, you know, why dangle it like that? Why not just tell us what it was? So yeah, I got it just before Jason got here for the Toronto Timepiece show. So that's about how long we've had it. And apologies if I didn't talk about it with any great reverence because it's just a minivan. I don't really care. I did a ton of research to make sure I got one that I'm happy with. And I would say I'm kind of happy with it. It's fine. It's like a fridge with wheels. It's a 2015 Toyota Sienna you know, at least on paper, believed to be essentially a cockroach of the minivan realm. It should never die or let my family down. It's in great condition. It's got all-wheel drive. And otherwise, it's like I said, it's a fridge with wheels. It serves a purpose. It gets my family to and from places. We just did our first kind of extended, you know, road trip down to Pennsylvania in it, and it was marvelous. My daughters love having the extra space. Everybody loves, you know, being able to hear each other speak versus the Wrangler. And that sort of thing. So I still have the Wrangler. It's in storage for the winter while I decide what I want to do with it. I don't think we have a need for two vehicles that are both fairly utilitarian in scope. So we might, you know, get the Wrangler in a position where it's more sellable and then let it go. But I'm not really sure. But at this point, yeah, we're driving a 10-year-old Toyota Sienna, which I spent, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months researching and trying to find one that felt like it was a reasonable sort of price to value scenario.
All right. Well, we're closing in on it here. I've got one more. You've got a couple left on your list.
Yeah. Your last one is probably my number one recommendation of the year. I've watched it twice. It's amazing. And we can close on that. So I can buzz through a few here. The next one that's nice and quick is the Natsu To-Do Index Card. So these are just simple kind of formed index cards that are designed for taking down notes or making lists of things to do. It's something I started going back to with like a paper PDA earlier in the year, and then I kind of lost pace with it. And now that I've got the TGN CPN1, I'm back on it, and I love it. It's a really easy way. I've got a card for work, I've got a card for TGN, I've got a card for this or that, and that way I'm spending, you know, if I'm doing anything digitally, it's more like actual development rather than just noting down something to remember. And the other thing I found is if you pull this out and, you know, open a pen, nobody feels like they're not being listened to.
Mm.
Whereas if somebody goes like, hey, what about that thing that we're going to do on Wednesday? And I pull out my phone and go to Todoist and start typing it in. Yeah. It derails the entire conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's something to be said for that. And these are the Natsu. And to be clear, you could just use normal cue cards, like index cards, whatever people, recipe cards, whatever you want to call them. But these are the slightly more elevated, put a bull clip on the top, have a good pen that you enjoy, and go from there. It's been a nice way to kind of organize, because I like that you can kind of section things off into like, oh, this is the card for what I might want if I go to the store in the next week, a card for work in the next day, a card for a phone call that I have coming up later, or a team meeting. And it's very easy. And when you're through with a card, you have this very immense sense of completion when you get through something. And then at the end of the day, you can just kind of flip through it and, you know, consolidate it down into what needs to carry over to tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Good pick, appropriate for the beginning of resolution season, as people like to do. So
for sure. And so my next one on the pick is probably my favorite movie discovery of the year, like film discovery. And it's a movie from 1988 called Midnight Run. We spoke about it at length on a previous Final Note. Normally, I would wait for a film club, but I just enjoyed it so much that I wanted to recommend it out there. It's a bounty hunter played by Robert De Niro, pursues a former mafia accountant played by Charles Grodin, who is also being chased by a rival bounty hunter, the FBI, and his old mob boss after jumping bail. It's directed by Martin Brest. It's absolutely awesome. Yaphet Kotto is in this as the FBI agent. He's amazing. And then you also have Dennis Farina plays Jimmy Serrano, has some of the most ridiculous lines.
He's always good
in this movie. He's incredible. He's just absolutely and like, Out of Sight is so high up there. And he plays Jennifer Lopez's father in that. Great movie. While we're on the topic, but yeah, this was an absolute winner. It's got so many great people in it. But the ability for them to weave a comedy, an action film, and a drama almost kind of effortlessly, and there's a watch element that I wouldn't dare give away. It's a great movie. The only thing I would say is if you're sensitive to bad language, this is one to skip. Otherwise, it's a delight.
Well, I haven't seen that one, so it's on my list. Maybe I'll pick that up over the holidays here and chill out in the afternoon and watch it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a winner. One of my favorites of the year. I've been through it a couple of times. Might watch it again. I've got my brothers coming over for a sort of movie day just after Christmas, and this could definitely be on the list. So that's Midnight Run from 1988. I'm sure a future film club entry.
Yeah.
All right. Let's continue the run here. The next one is a YouTube video of a cover of a song that I really like by a band I've listened to a ton this year called the Broody Brothers. And this is their cover of The House of the Rising Sun. I talked about this when I first found it. I had found the band because they had sort of a song that became popular on Instagram. And then it turned out I kind of liked all of their music and I could just leave the album playing, which I really like. And then over time, thanks to Tidal, I was eventually served this incredible cover of House of the Rising Sun. And, you know, you've got a harmonica in there. It's great. It's just it's a song that's delivered on its effects.
Mm-hmm.
The incredible voice, the way that these guys sing, but especially the lead is singing, and then the harmonica and the sort of ghostly guitar, and it's played in a very similar fashion. It's a very straightforward cover. We're not changing genre or that sort of thing, but it has its own style, and I really like it. I listen to it probably once a week. I like it a lot.
Yeah, when you introduced this one, I listened to it too, and then got hooked on Broody Brothers. So my approach to Broody Brothers was kind of the opposite of yours, because I came to it through this song and then branched out from there. But yeah, good pick. All right, you have one more, and then we can co-present the last one here.
Let's do one more, and then I'm very excited for the last one. And I'm excited to pump. But this next one is the last of my suggestions for the year from Speed with 3 E's. That's James Pumphrey and his pals, relatively new YouTube channel that he made after leaving Donut. Talked about it a ton. This is testing 100 years of camping gear. I just really liked this video. It's very straightforward. It's very accessible. If you're deep into camping, this probably isn't for you. So the idea of taking gear from 1925 and then again from 1975 and then 2025, I thought was quite fascinating. And certainly Jason, when we talked about it on the show, Jason, you provided several other people that had done this on much harder. These guys are walking around Yosemite. It's a good hike. But it's not, you know, a 14er or something like that, or Himalayan peak. But I just really enjoyed this. It's funny. There's elements of it from the food and the camping, like the tent and all that. It's not just the boots and the jacket and the backpack and that sort of thing. So I had a really good time with it. They do a lovely job with this. And I think Zach and Jesse are such great kind of support for this. And it's exciting to see them also in more of the videos.
Yeah, it's a good one, and I am. It's a constant source of fascination. This kind of previous era's use of equipment and clothing. I was just watching Train Dreams last night with Joel Edgerton, which is a good movie, and it takes place back in the early part of the 20th century. And he's a logger, you know, and out there in canvas and leather and wool, you know.
You're a real Edgerton fan.
I love Edgerton. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, he's great. Ties into that well. So yeah, good one. And that leads to the last one on the list. Appropriately, it's called Listers, A Glimpse into Extreme Bird Watching. This was your pick from several months ago. Just a clever movie that really plays into kind of our ethos of just being a nerd about something in life and having hobbies and enthusiasm for things. And kind of the strap line about this is two brothers learn about competitive bird watching by becoming bird watchers, spending a year living in a used minivan, traveling the country to compete in a big year. So it's on YouTube. It's 2 hours long. It's quirky. It's just delightful. Really enjoyed this one.
I don't really know how to describe it because however I describe it, it wouldn't encapsulate the weirdness, just how oddball it is, just how on the sleeve the whole presentation is. But then at the same time, the story is so tight and confined and well presented.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that these two guys, both of whom can be funny, vulgar, you know, the whole stretch of these two brothers, and they go to see how many different bird species they could see in a year. It's called a big year. It's a very competitive thing, and in the process, they learn about how competitive it is, how people lie and cheat and how people enforce the rules and the drama within the community and all that sort of thing. And I think it's a microcosm community that I think leads in some way into other fascinations, whether it could be watches or cars or pens or whatever else you might be into. But then you add in this road trip sort of vibe, and their personalities are so funny to me and so endearing. And at the same time, you just go like, how did you guys figure out how to do this for a year and put a whole movie together? Parts of it feel like it's shot on high 8, and parts are shot on, you know, like modern high def cameras. And I love the presentation. I love everything about this. It's 2 hours of like documentary perfection. It's great. what a great thing to have come in, though. It's been seen. It came out August 19 of this year, and it's got 2.5 million views, and that doesn't feel like anywhere near enough. Yeah, I an absolute winner. I highly recommend.
Well, that was a list, good list, but there were so many more that I left off.
Yep.
That but look, the nice thing is they're all still there. They're all on back episodes, and you can probably search and find them on Paul Hubbard's complete.
Yeah. Paul's got a great, we'll link that if you don't know what it is, but it's an ability. He's essentially transcribed all of TGN. You can go back through and find things that way. You can obviously go to the end of any list of show notes. The last two or three will usually be the final notes. And also, look, I'm sure even in the stuff that we, I went back over every episode and scanned. I'm sure we missed somebody's favorite. Let us know in the Slack. Let's start a thread of your favorite final notes, or things that you would love to see considered as for final note stuff next year, or things that a final note made you think of. I like that kind of stuff where you go, oh, you like listers, maybe you'd like this, right? And you go from there, and then before you know it, you've got a rabbit hole, and what's better than that, right?
Right. Yeah. We love getting suggestions, and we use them quite a bit, as you've seen. So keep them coming. Mm-hmm.
And look, to close the show, I can hand it off to you, Jason, with your annual selection. One that we're not going to change. It's the only final note that's needed in a show full of final notes. Why don't you take it away with something I'm sure many people are expecting for our last show of the year.
Yeah, definitely. This became kind of an annual favorite of ours, and a bit of a tradition here. It comes via the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, the CBC. Back in 2017, they put up a recording of well-liked radio personality Fireside Al Maitland reading the short story by Frederick Forsyth called The Shepherd. Yeah, so it's a very holiday-themed story. It's about a pilot, Cold War-era pilot, 1957, who's flying home from mainland Europe across the North Sea in a vampire fighter jet to get home for Christmas in England. He runs into some trouble, and there's just all sorts of interesting elements. It's a bit of a ghost story. It's a holiday tale. And it's just, it leaves you with some warmth, and Al Maitland, just is a delightful reader, and I just really enjoy it. It's become an annual tradition to just kind of sit and listen to this once or twice during the holiday season. And I checked the link, and it's still up, on the CBC's website, as it should be. And, I've actually read the book as well, and that's good. And I've heard other editions, but I've heard versions of this audio version of it, but this one is my favorite. So yeah. Check it out. That's The Shepherd on the CBC.
Yeah, this is an annual delight. I didn't go back and check how long you've been recommending this, but for several years at least. And at this point, I even texted you yesterday. I was like, do you think we need more final notes? Like, should I come up with one? I've got a couple sitting around, but they'll still be good in January. And you're like, nah, I think it's good. Just to stick with The Shepherd. And yeah, on the idea of there being other versions out there, I even considered, like, if another version should exist, why not from us?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, right.
Why not with Jason reading it, and we can put together the sound effects. And do a proper. But I just listen to this first, and you'll see why I don't think we would bother.
I don't think
it's
so.
It's perfect.
Yeah. It is perfect.
It's perfect. It'd be like redoing North by Northwest. Why even bother?
Yeah.
Or The Rope, like,
right.
Or Rope, like, why even bother? You can't do it.
Yeah.
You can't do it better than perfect. Yeah, I think they did a great job, and this is always a delight. It's something I'm warming my daughters to, the idea of, like, an audio play sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy it, and yeah, it's nice to sit in the dark room near the tree, maybe the AirPods in, maybe on the speakers, who knows, and kind of just enjoy it. It's a little annual tradition, and something I'm glad that we support for sure.
Well, there we have it. Episode 358.
There it is.
Last episode of 2025. It's been a great year. We're skidding in right at the end here. We do have another Q&A to record, which will pop up after this one goes up, probably sometime between Christmas and New Year's. But other than that, thanks, James, for another great year.
And thank you, man.
And thanks to everybody that's out there listening. Yeah.
Yeah, we did want to take a minute here to say a few thank yous, and that, of course, includes CWC and Tactile Turn and StayCom Industries and Matt Ludvigson for partnering with us to make some pretty fun stuff. And then just a huge thank you to the Slack TGN crew and, of course, our beloved moderators, Chris Soule, Jake TS, and Jackson B. Thank you so much for all of your help and effort in keeping the crew alive and happy and healthy. I like to believe that we live in a world where we bring a lot of value and it balances out what you pay and the interest in the merch and expensive pens and watches and that kind of stuff. But I also don't want to say that we'd be doing any of this without all of you. You know, it's been a delight these last several years to be able to be part of this community and to feel some weight and duty to bring things that are more fun, to bring things that are more interesting, to try and come up with ways to delight and entertain and educate and all that kind of thing. And then finally, you know, we had on some incredible guests from the crew, including, you know, Derek and Chris and Brock and Tom Place. And then we had on guys like Jack Carr. And it was just a great year of bringing on other voices to the show and something I really want to continue into next year. So yeah, certainly from Jason and definitely from myself, a huge thank you to everyone listening and everyone who kind of helped put us in a position to make a show like this and to be able to have some fun with it. Looking forward to 2026.
Yeah, our 10th year. Wow. Hard to believe. Let's bask. Yeah,
never in the plan.
Exactly right. All right. Well, happy holidays to everybody and to you, James. And we'll be in touch, certainly.
You too,
man. We'll see everybody around on the Slack. But in the meantime, as always, thanks so much for listening to this episode and to all the ones preceding. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout is, as ever, Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive, as it's been since the very beginning.
And we'll leave with this quote from Abraham Lincoln, who said, "The best thing about the future is that it comes one day at a time."